Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You open the fridge. There's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-thru burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein. No artificial flavors or colors. No chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
I get the biggest joy out of sharing a story that's going to inspire others. When you see a student athlete doing something and getting that publicity and knowing that that's touching lives. For me, that's the biggest thing that we can do here is everyone wins and loses games. But when you can share something that's going to touch someone's life, that's the most important thing we do.
And our guest this week is Larry Dougherty, who has spent some two decades with Temple University. Right now, he is the Senior Associate Athletic Director for Strategic Communications. Larry, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me, Matt.
So for people who aren't familiar, talk a little bit about what your job is. Now, a lot of people might know, a lot of times, somebody in your role or in a younger role, it's referred to as a sports information director. Correct. Talk a little bit about what you do.
Well, I look at it as a professional sports franchise, it would be the public relations director. You know, so we are trying to promote Temple University or whatever university that my colleagues would be at through our athletic teams, our coaches, and our players. So we're trying to sell our school. And at Temple and at other schools I've been at, you know, it's so easy to do it because we have 500 student athletes. We have 19 head coaches. We have so many individuals doing so many things, not just on the field of play, but in the community and just getting educations. And then you follow them and see what they do in life. So it's really something we're just trying to promote and sell what's good in athletics and in college athletics.
What's a day? I think one of the things, as someone who's worked closely in college sports, there is not your typical day. Like, anything can happen. And even in the most mundane of runs, there are always fires to put out. But, you know, what's an average, as close to an average day as you could come up with?
Sure. Why don't we just play it out as if today is happening, and we'll take this interview out, for instance, okay, and just say, you know, we play Temple Batman's basketball plays at the Palestra against LaSalle. And our former head coach, Fran Dunphy. So I am preparing for that game today. Just finished up our game notes. And game notes, to people that aren't familiar, is what we provide as PR people to the media so they can talk about our team and know everything that we want them to know about our team so they can be knowledgeable when they're out there. You know, someone who's doing the TV broadcast for the game tomorrow, you want them to come across as if they've been around our program for a long time. And that's our job, to prepare them. So we give them notes to prepare them. So that takes some time. You know, also doing right now an athletics newsletter. We put out a newsletter every 2 weeks. So we want to let our alums know and our fans of Temple Athletics know all the good things we're doing. You know, and it's written through our office with our athletic director, our vice president, Arthur Johnson. So we're doing all that stuff here. Pretty much, again, everything is involved is to sell the university to people that are going to come, potential students that are going to come, to enroll and get a great education.
So let's talk about your origin story. Now, your dad did this job at St. Joe's back in the day. Was this always the path for you? You knew that you wanted to do something in this realm, or, you know, kind of tell me how you got introduced, how you started in it.
Well, like my older brother, Andy, who's named after my father, he's the oldest in the family. We were basketball managers at St. Joe's Prep. And when he graduated a year before me, he became a manager at St. Joseph's College, now university, as for the men's team. I didn't plan on working in athletics at all. I planned on that was it. I was going to go, and my major was, at that point, was accounting, and I changed to sociology. There was no sports management at St. Joe's at that time. So I was just going to be a student. I was just going to be a normal college student, follow sports. I like sports. And someone told me that the women's basketball team needed a basketball manager, which I did at St. Joe's Prep. And so it was, I think my brother said, you should do that. They travel to, you know, take on plane trips, which back in the 70s, I wasn't traveling on a plane much. I'm going to play Old Dominion. They won the national championship. They've got Nancy Lieberman is on their team. So I'm like, okay, I'll try that. I've never seen a women's basketball game. Went Jim Foster, who's in the Women's College Basketball Hall of Fame and coached at St. Joe's for, I think, 13, 15 years and did great things there. Went to Vanderbilt. He was the coach. First year head coach was Jim Foster. His number one assistant, I think only assistant at the time, was Gino Auriemma, kind of a, you know, little known women's basketball coach.
Had a little bit of success in the realm.
Yeah, so I got kind of cut my teeth there and kind of, like, you know, got to like what I was doing. And my father, as you mentioned, he was the SID at St. Joe's. So he was the only person working full-time trying to sell the sports teams to the media. And no one was doing women's basketball, so I not only was the manager, but also was kind of like their assistant SID and kind of helping promote women's basketball at St. Joe's back in the 70s. And I got to like what I was doing and thought, geez, I'm just going to walk out of here and get a job. Well, no, you have to go through a lot of other steps, like, you know, got to get internships, go to grad school, do all that. But it became a career and became a passion. And I think what you do, too, it's something that, you know, it doesn't even feel like work at times because you just love what you're doing.
Do you remember, you know, you talk about that as your entry point, but when your dad's doing it, did you get a window into what the job was about through him?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I think he cared so much about St. Joseph's, and he's in their Hall of Fame, and just he was doing it even when they weren't paying him. You know, he was only there for 9 years, and I think I'm going to be starting like my 39th year in this industry. So he came back, he knew Jack Ramsey, and he kind of, window opened up, and he took over at St. Joe's and doing PR. So I saw what he was doing and liked what he was doing, and obviously I like sports. But now what he was doing back in 1982 when I graduated is so much more different than what we're doing in 2022. It's light years removed. You know, we don't use a typewriter. I don't think many listeners may not know what a typewriter is, but it really has changed a lot in how we're not just providing the media with, like, stats. We are creating, as we mentioned, game notes and trying to put the university in the best possible light through these teams and travel and everything that we do. And now we've got social media and we've got what's happening with the portal for athletics and the NILs and everything that's happening in college athletics. We're trying to make sure we, again, realize that it's about the student-athletes and the coaches and the school itself.
I would think, and I want to dig into this deeper, but the job in 1980 and the job in 2022, there are only thin strands that connect them as far as what goes into it.
Correct. You know, there was very few media covering the teams back then, and the teams were covered, they were revered, the Big Five back in the 70s and 80s. There's some amazing stories there. And they were covered well by the Bulletin and by the Inquirer and the Daily News. And then, obviously, TV in this area and radio. But it has changed so much because of all the websites and all the, you know, social media and everything, all the other coverage that comes out. And back when I first started out, it was more about all the positives of college athletics and positives of sports. Now, a lot of it becomes, something's wrong. There's a negative, you know. And there was back then, but there's more of a focused spotlight because of all the, you know, unique media entities that can kind of try to dig through something. And for the most part, college athletics and even professional, it's really good. You know, it's entertaining. And in college sports, we're here about graduating our students and student athletes as much as we are putting them in professional roles.
You talked about the job from a promotion standpoint. Mm-hmm. That's obviously like a giant pillar, but there's also you're kind of the front line. You talk about the media, you know, and who gets access, who doesn't, you know, getting the kids ready for dealing with that. How challenging is kind of that part of the role? And when I say gatekeeping, I don't mean you're keeping all these people out, but just who gets to come to the game, who gets to come sure. and talk to the kids, what interviews are you going to really push, what ones are you going to be like, we'll see what we can do. How challenging is that, and how long did it take for you to kind of get your arms around that part? Because I would imagine it's more challenging now than it was, you know, when you first started, because like you said, there were 8 or 9 guys for the most part.
Sure.
And you knew them. And you knew who was what was what and who had an agenda and who was harmless, stuff like that. But now you're probably getting calls from entities that are legit, but you've never heard of them and you've got to make a decision.
No, we get that all the time. And I'm sure my colleagues do, too. We get emails. We get calls. I mean, it's like you've never heard of the site. And I'll have even, you know, my colleagues at Villanova and at Penn maybe reach out and say, hey, I just got this. Have you gotten any requests from them? And we'll kind of share that. What I'll usually look at to see how legitimate is this? You know, one, do they have a website? Are they writing anything about college sports? Or they just want to get in and feel like they're close to the players and the coaches? That's one. Two, you know, if they seem to be legitimate, but we're not certain, and they're asking for, say, the Temple-Villanova game, well, that's not really going to happen. But maybe there's the Temple-Wagner game that I'm going to give that person, young person, hopefully a chance to see, are they worth it, you know? Because we have some space. There's some issues, but we have some space on certain games. Like, I want to give these smaller media entities a chance. But I also got to make sure, as you mentioned, a gatekeeper, to say, is this legitimate? Do I need to put my student athletes or coaches in front of this person? Because it could do damage. Because you could be reckless. But, you know, I've been more open to trying to see what can they provide. You know, but then again, if we became, say, for instance, Duke men's basketball, if you're in the top 5 in the country, you're getting bombarded well more than Temple and St. Joe's and Penn. So it's like we don't have that flexibility to do that. So we have a little bit more right now, and I'm hoping that shortens a little bit because we get a lot better. I love our team right now. But that's kind of where I'm at. If I have the opportunity to try to help someone that's trying to get in, who knows, 5, 10 years from now, that person might be someone that could really help Temple. So. And we've given them a chance, and maybe we get a nice positive story out of that.
You talked about the early days when you're a manager, and then you're doing SID work for mm-hmm. for the women. You liked it. Was there a conversation with yourself the first couple years that, well, I like it now, but I still might? Or once you kind of got a couple years and got through the grind, did you have the bug and like, one way or another, this is what I'm doing?
Yeah, no, my first couple of years, I went from, you know, I was a grad assistant at St. Joe's for a year and then kind of went really all in on school, went to St. Thomas in Florida, did a grad assistant, and then was full-time at Nicholls State in Thibodaux, Louisiana. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners here know what Thibodaux is or where it is. So I do that, and then I also, in between there, was at the East Coast Conference, which is where St. Joe's and LaSalle and Drexel were at that time in the mid-80s, they were not. They were all in different leagues. So cut my teeth there, finally came back to St. Joe's and kind of knew where I was. But I think when I was still in that formative stage of my career, I was like wondering, I'm sitting in Thibodaux, Louisiana in a football game and saying, I'm the only Yankee in the deep South. And I'm wondering, is this where I want to be with my career? And then situation to open up at my alma mater, St. Joe's, and I became an assistant there and I came back to Philadelphia. And I'm a Philadelphia guy, so it was really just a great to get back. Because you're right, you always say, is this where I want to be? Especially when you're like in your early to mid-20s and you're saying, it's work, I like it, but is this where's the career going to lead me to? And I look back and I say, I'm really fortunate and thankful that I did stay the path.
But Thibodaux, Louisiana, maybe it's not where you want to be in the big picture, mm-hmm. but I spent a year in Jefferson City, Missouri, and wouldn't do it again, but really glad I did it.
Sure.
Is it kind of the same thing? And you get exposed to things and people that you would probably never get exposed to, maybe get an appreciation for things. You might not agree, you might not want to do it, but you understand where it's coming from. It just kind of helps round you out as a professional, as a person.
It really does. I mean, like, you know, especially like, you know, as we've been divisive at times in this country, like I've lived in the deep South. You don't get much further south than Thibodaux, Louisiana. And the people there are just like the people here. So everyone that there's, forget politics, it's just real people, different things that they're dealing with, but the school being a smaller school, you know, I was at St. Joe's. This school was it was much bigger than St. Joe's. But just the way of life, like there was probably 17,000 population in Thibodaux, Louisiana. So a little bit different than Philadelphia. I just really, I enjoyed it. I loved it. I've been back once. I would go back again. It's just, it was a great experience in my life. I went back twice. I was a grad assistant and a full-time assistant. So, and it was a place where I could have stayed. You know, and just St. Joe's opened up, and that kind of was where my heart was.
So when you come on board there at St. Joe's, what is it like working in the office where your dad worked? Did it add pressure? Did it make it easier? Was there any kind of dynamic with that?
Well, I'm not only working where my dad worked, but working with who my dad worked was with Don DeGiulia, who is just a legend. And if he hasn't been on here, we should get him on this.
Agreed.
So, because he'd have way better stories than I do. Don, is a legendary college administrator at St. Joe's for over 40 years. And I had the privilege of working with him, one as an undergraduate, and then working with him for 15 years, you know, at full-time at St. Joe's. And there's no better person that you can work for. And learned a lot. So it was interesting because working with the person who was my father's, supervisor or boss too. So we knew each other well and our families well. So it kind of made it a little bit easier to do that. And the thing is, and my father has obviously passed, but when he loved the fact that I followed in his footsteps, but when we would talk about it, it was so different, even like 10 to 15 years after he had retired, you know, and no one even thought about, even at that point, the explosion of the internet. So just a whole different dynamic. But what he was better at and what I think the media people or the PR people back in the 70s and 60s, where it was a relationship, you know, and I think I still have that, but I think that's getting lost with texting and tweets and with emails. There's not much one-on-one conversations anymore with the media, and that wasn't always the case back when I started.
What was the, when you really take over at St. Joe's or get in there at St. Joe's, what was the most difficult part of the job to get your arms around? Like, what was the thing that was just the biggest struggle for you?
Well, I mean, I guess just trying to do as much as I could for our Olympic sports. I hate when the term is used non-revenue. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Olympic sports is what it should be. Everyone at St. Joe's, and I think still does, it's about men's basketball, and then it's about women's basketball, and it's like about what else? Well, just looking from afar now, they have a really great field hockey program at St. Joe's, and lacrosse is doing better, and they didn't even have that when I started. So there's all these other student-athletes. When I first got back to St. Joe's, that's one of the things I wanted to really stress, to say, let's try to tell this story. And when I started, we didn't even have the internet, let alone social media. So just try to get these student-athletes and get them to feel like they're getting as much love and respect from athletics as men's basketball, because they're always in the spotlight, but everyone's putting on a uniform and representing your university. So that was kind of probably the biggest challenge, was trying to tell their stories, you know, and get that out there, because Philadelphia has so many of those stories. And I think you've done a great job of telling them yourself. And I'm not just saying that as your friend, but just I listen to what you've done and expose stories like that. Not this one, though. Anyway, but that's what I wanted to do, man. I wanted to really try to sink my teeth in there and try to tell the stories of those student athletes that don't get told.
From your standpoint, how would you approach that? And is it different now than it was then, as far as the tools you would use in your toolbox to get a fencing story, a cross country, you know, fill in the blank with whatever sport you want. But what would you do to try to get that out there in 1993 as opposed to now?
Yeah, 93, you're trying to really reach out to reporters, to write your story, to try to sell that. And in Philadelphia, that's a challenge because it's not just St. Joseph's at that time or a temple that has these great stories. And there's so much, there's so limited space in the papers and on radio and on television to tell them. It's, you know, you have that and you're competing against that and also against every professional sport. So it's very difficult. So now it's so much easier to tell it because you have your own website. You can either do it yourself, have a student, a grad student do it, or a student worker or your staff, and just find the story and then sell it. The greatest story that you can is someone, a story that can touch lives. And we had a lacrosse player who talked about, you know, something very personal that was, you know, that she shared with us on our website, and it got like 10,000 views. And she was asked to talk about something that she was doing to hurt herself, you know, and she had overcome that. And she wanted to share that so others would be able to overcome that. And it was a great story because we always say touch lives. That did touch lives. And she continued to do it afterwards.
How frustrating can it be when you've got a story like that or and you just can't get anybody to do it? And it's about, like you said, now you've got the capabilities with the web, with your own website and social media to do it on your own. But there are certain times and probably certain places now that are like, you know, one person vans that have one person doing 19 sports and stuff like that. How frustrating is it when you just can't make people care, for lack of a better term, about something they should care about?
No, it really is, because like you think that you have that story and, you know, you've been doing it a while. You say this can help others. And I think our media has shrunk, especially covering sports. So there's not many people that can you can go and pitch it to. They're going to get that done locally. Nationally, then you've got a really – nationally, usually you get a local push to get the national. So, you know, that'll help you. So it is frustrating. That's why I think we're fortunate at Temple, because we have a great social and digital media team where we can tell the story. We can have Vaughn Moss, who handles our social and digital media at Temple. Kevin Kopp, who can provide the ability to tell the story visually. Now, we put it out there. Now we find out if the story's real, because we share it on our social accounts, and if people pick up on it, now that can also then lead to stories down the line on a national level. That's kind of how I say, well, we can overcome the inability to sell it in Philadelphia by doing it ourselves, and if we think it's worth it, we get it out there, then others see it and they say, well, we now want to talk to that person. And that's happened before. So
we need to take a break. We will have more with Temple University's Larry Dougherty right after this. This is One-on-One.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back on One-on-One, continuing our conversation with Larry Dougherty, Senior Associate Athletic Director for Strategic Communications at Temple University. You mentioned the time at Nichols State, and were you the only person in that office at that point?
Myself and a graduate assistant.
How many sports ballpark?
We had 19.
So obviously you have to prioritize with just, you know, football, basketball, things that are going to draw the most attention. But how would you spread yourself to make sure that everything was at least getting the bases covered? Because I would imagine that is something that when you first start almost has to feel overwhelming. Like you've already written five recaps, you've already talked to four coaches, and then you look down and there's still three more sports that have stuff that weekend that you have to do something with. I mean, how did you get your arms around all that? And how did you organize?
And Matt, it was different. And now you couldn't. I mean, I don't understand. See how Division II and Division III communications professionals sometimes get it done, because I know that we have something called Philly SIDA, which is a group of like networking group here of all the Division I, II, and IIIs. Mike Mahoney at Penn is kind of overtaking that as the czar to make sure we can, if someone needs help, they send him an email and he spreads it out. Now, the school will pay for that because you only have one or two PR professionals, but you have seven home events. Someone's got to cover them. So that's kind of where we are then. We're now, but then it was not as challenging because there was no internet. There was no story writing. You really just needed to make sure that the game was getting staffed. So you got the statistics out. So it's still a challenge, but we would use student workers. When I first got to Temple, we were sending student workers to a men's soccer game in the Atlantic 10 because we didn't have a professional that could handle that. And, you know, I remember Al Schreier, and you know Al, he was just a legendary PR person. And he was like, well, we don't have someone. I said, well, Al, then I've got to do it. And then I wasn't trying to be this hero. I just said, we can't have men's soccer go off and we have a student and it's off campus and it's a home event. The other school, what happens to them? We got to be professional. So we did that. Then we grew our staff. Bill Bradshaw was the AD at that time and just said, I need more grad assistants to kind of plug in. But there are schools that struggle and you just try to somehow find a way and get good students and hopefully they like working these crazy hours we do.
So you spend, what, 15 years at St. Joe's start to finish?
15, correct.
And then you make the move to Temple. Was it the opportunity that intrigued you? Were you looking to pivot somewhere else? Kind of how did it come together?
Yeah, no, I mean, Bill Bradshaw, who I knew, he had been the athletic director at LaSalle, and I knew him when he was there, and he went to DePaul, came back to Temple. I'd only been at Temple for 2 years. And knew the position was open, so it was like, okay, that's interesting. And so I applied for it because the one thing that I didn't have on my resume was Division I football. And if I wanted to improve or move up in my field, that's where I wanted to go. And I'm thinking this is an opportunity to not even leave my house.
Right.
To drive an additional like 5 miles and better myself and do this for my family, even though I'm a St. Joe's grad, I'm leaving my alma mater to do that, but it would be more, I'd be able to help my family more financially. So I still remember it, and I get the offer from Bill. It took like over a month from my interview, and I'm thinking, well, I didn't get that job. And got the call, got the offer, took the position. And I remember telling my kids, my daughter was, I think, 8 at the time, and my son, 10, at the dinner table that I'm leaving to go to Temple. And my daughter, Mackenzie, stands up. She looks me in the eye and she said, you traitor. And she walks up the steps, like storms up the steps. I don't think I talked to her for like 2 weeks. And then she said, well, she somehow got into cheerleading. Can I be a cheerleader there? I'm like, sure. And then that was it. We're all set. But it was just such a, you know, I'm like thinking, this is great. I'm doing this, you know, making this move. I'm enriching the family and the whole thing. And I'm a traitor. So, you know, I expected that from my father, not from my daughter. So, but. No, and it's been great since. I mean, it's been an amazing 20 years. Going from a school that we were rivals and moving over there was, you know, now I'm a Temple Owl. And my St. Joe's people might not like that, but I mean, I've been at Temple for 2 decades, starting my third. So.
Was it weird at first, though, just because you knew all the players, all the places, you know, yeah. For the most part, you probably had working relationships with a lot of people, but now you were there. Was there a period where it seemed kind of surreal, like you had ripped the space-time continuum and stepped into an alternate reality?
Yeah, it probably was the weirdest when we had an incident with St. Joe's, like in my second year with Coach Cheney, and not to revisit what was termed Goongate, but that was tough for me because, like, I knew all of the players on both sides. I knew the administrators at St. Joe's. knew all their basketball players. I knew their coaching staff. And I am a Temple Owl, and I will defend Coach Chaney. And he is, there's no greater man. There's some as great, but he is an amazing, amazing man and just a great friend. So it was just, that was where it kind of hit me, like, oh my gosh, like it's like worlds collide. But yeah, no, I bought in right away at Temple. You know, I mean, it was easy because you're working with coaches and supporting them and student athletes. So you want to, I did a lot of digging deep to read up on all of these sports. So I was able to talk to our student athletes and know what was going on. But that second year was the toughest year for it. But since then, I've been, you know, it's like I root for St. Joe's to win their games. I'm an alum. But when we play, there's no, oh, that's, it's nice that they won. No, it's always Temple, and we play them in every sport.
And just to, for people that aren't familiar, that situation was St. Joe's Temple basketball. Coach Chaney got frustrated, put a player in for the express purpose of fouling.
Correct.
Hard, and it.
And the player at St. Joseph's became injured.
Yeah.
Not severely, but he had to miss the season because of a, but it, yeah, it was a national.
Oh, it was huge.
And Matt, you'll appreciate there was no internet back when there was no social media.
Right.
So, I mean, I've thought about that, you know, and said, what would happen if that happened?
I can't even, especially you know. Someone like Coach Chaney, who had a lot of people who loved him, also had people that didn't like.
Oh, it's just.
And I can't get my head around what that would have looked like in 2022 media landscape.
No, and then the next year, Coach listened to me, and we kind of did some media that he maybe would not have done to say, let's tell your story because you went through the ringer here. And sure, that wasn't the intent, was not to hurt anybody. The intent was just basically to commit hard fouls.
Right.
It happens all the time, and to pick the sport. You know, it just an accident happened. There was no intent to hurt. And that's what we dealt with. Now let's tell your story because, like I said, there's no greater person who really cares about people than John Chaney did. And, you know, being around them. So I'm like, you may not care what people think about you, but I do because, like, I revere you and I want to make sure that people understand who you are. And I think they did. I mean, I think there are people that really know Philadelphia basketball and college basketball know that John Chaney is just a great man.
Oh, he won one of the absolute legends. What was it like? Well, I guess when you come to Temple,
sure.
You obviously had talked with Coach Chaney over the years. Mm-hmm. For what was it like kind of becoming part of the family with him at the head? What was it like early on?
Well, the funny thing I'd say is I didn't really have as much interaction as I would have probably you think back then. And when I was at St. Joe's, when I first got here, I was like, well, I work with Phil Martelli and Phil was always like, don't call me coach, call me Phil. So I'm like, when I'm going to be with Coach Chaney, I'm going to be like, I got to set that as being like, I'm a professional, you are, I'm working to help you. So I call him John. He was fine with that. And he knew my father. So that got me in.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't Al Schreier, it was my father. You're Andy Dock's son, you're in. So I remember being over in his office. Now, this is maybe after quite a few months, and I'm calling him John. And he would pick the phone up and he'd say, coach here. He called himself coach, and I'm calling him John. So I'm like, I feel like I'm disrespecting him. So after that, I just said, I'm just going to keep calling him coach. And that's all I did the rest of the time, even after he was done coaching, because that was just a term of endearment to him. And when you call yourself it, it's like, there you go. But it was kind of like, you know, I tried to say, I can't be intimidated by this legend of a man. So I tried to kind of work with him and find a way. And he's just, he was a sweetheart. All the antics on the sidelines, just down-to-earth sweetheart, and being around him away from the court, off campus and stuff, just to see him, how he interacted with people. He really cared about people, which was great.
Do you have a favorite John Chaney story that you can share?
Ooh, that I can share, huh?
That's doing a lot of work in that sentence.
Yeah. No, you know what? It would probably be after he retired and he would go to Walnut Lane Golf Course and he would play like pinochle cards with a lot of other retired people, and he was the only person of color in the room. And I used to think there were people who thought he was racist, you know, and there wasn't a racist bone in Coach Chaney's body, and he would stand up for things, for injustices. But he's sitting there just having just a great time playing pinochle, not playing for money, at a golf course. And I look and say, if people that really judged him could just see this man and this, and just, it made me feel good, you know, and I love setting up interviews, and we would go out to the golf course and do interviews, some student media and stuff like that. Couldn't be a nicer person to do it. Just the persona and then the reality. That's what I always remember about Coach Chaney.
You've dropped some names, Phil Martelli, John Chaney, and you go on to work with Fran Dunphy. These are kind of the top level guys that you've worked with and all guys that got it. Understand your role, the importance of your role, the importance of where they were doing, what they were doing and stuff like that. Without throwing anybody under the bus specifically, have you had situations over the years with coaches who didn't get it, maybe didn't want to get it? And how do you maneuver when the person that's kind of the center of that universe doesn't want to cooperate?
Yeah. And yes, I would say yes. I think it's rare, but you're going to get that. And I think earlier in my career, when I was younger, I would get it more, you know, and it just depends. Everyone's different.
Right.
Everyone's got different personality, and you just got to try to find common ground and work with that. So you can't, you know, get your back up when you're treated like that, but you also have to stand your ground and be professional with the coach. So that's why I try to tell our younger people to say, like, you know, you don't want to be mistreated. But just remember that you don't know what's going on with that coach in that moment, like, you know, even a student athlete, what's going on in their world. Just you be professional, and then hopefully you can bridge that. You know, that's kind of how I look at it. Thankfully, it hasn't happened as often. It might be because I'm just getting old. People don't do it.
No, I think just from my dealing, most folks get it. If they don't like dealing with the media, they understand that this is a little harsh term, a necessary evil. But there are, I think, I've also come across folks that just don't care. Well, that just...
And the toughest time is your last game. You're at the NCAA tournament. It's always the toughest time. Someone's going to lose that game, and if it's an overtime game, and it's going to be... I can't imagine the year after I left St. Joe's when they went to the Elite Eight. They were 10 seconds away from the Final Four, basically. And their best player, and who's a friend of mine, Jameer Nelson, misses that jump shot. Not an easy jump shot, on the run and just rims off. And what they go through, and now they have to go face the media, you know, and try to get them to collect themselves. And Marie Wozniak followed my footsteps and did a great job with them. And sometimes you get lucky and you have a Jameer Nelson who just couldn't have been a better person from his first day I met him until even now, just handling himself and knowing that people are looking at me and I can impact people by how I handle a situation, especially one that is negative toward me, you know, in terms of losing the game. So anyway, that's kind of long way around it, but, you know, of how to handle that. So
have kids changed for the most part? I mean, I'm sure the interests, maybe the things they have to deal with have changed, but do you feel like the student athlete that you tried to promote in 1983 is basically the same kid in 2022, just different circumstances? Or do you feel like for the most part, there's a difference?
I would say there's a difference with just, and forget student athletes, with students in general, because when you talk about when I started until now, there was no social media.
Right.
I think social media has changed so much. Everyone's wondering the majority of people are worried about who's liking what or who's following them on social. What are they saying about me? There wasn't any saying about you back then. You know, maybe they were talking about you, but they weren't tweeting it out and posting your name and there are pictures about you. That, to me, is something. And then also now, I think college athletics is starting to change because of NIL and everything else that's going into it. For good or for bad, there's more opportunities for our student athletes now to enhance themselves financially because the rules have changed. And that's going to be probably 5 or 10 years from now to see how that impacts who they are. But my interactions with our Temple men's basketball team, which I'm closer with because I travel with them now, as maybe with St. Joe's basketball team in 1988, hasn't really changed that much. I think they're still young men that are trying to find themselves. You know, there's probably more media focus on them, but I think they still handle themselves in the same way. You know, just a couple more distractions maybe.
What is it like to have a job where the phone can ring at any time? And it's something that you're going to have to deal with. How do you not let that become overwhelming and kind of take over your life? Because I would imagine there are probably certain stretches where you're just, it's constantly, you know, I don't even mean put out fire, but you just constantly have to deal with stuff.
No, there's the worst thing that can happen is when there's a death, you know, and that's an unexpected death. And I've had to deal with that a few times. And that's when everything stops. And we just, the all focus is make sure that the family's okay. You know, make sure that what we're saying and how we're saying things, the family's aware. I mean, we're not, you know, just say when Coach Chaney passed, since we were just talking about him, I called and talked to his son because I had heard this on social media, but no one could confirm it. And I had talked to him like the week before, you know, and I talked to John, young John, and he told me, and then, you know, we basically both cried, you know, and then it just happened within like an hour and a half. Somehow that got out. And it's just like, okay, you tell me when. I mean, it's your family. Like, you make sure everyone knows, but your father's a national figure and we need to say something and you'll see it and we'll make sure we're good. And it can happen with a student athlete, which is the worst that can happen to. And it's happened there too, where you're dealing with so much tragedy. Every time I see that with a school that has to deal with that, it's like you just feel for everyone involved, the family, but you feel for the people that are trying to just do the best they can. And then also, you have other responsibilities, but everything has to stop. Everything's got to be buttoned up on that one thing because it's so important because you're dealing with, you know, people that just lost a loved one. So that to me is the biggest crisis, as we call it in our industry, when you have something that's so unexpected out of the blue and you get a call. There's times where kids make a mistake. You know, we've had issues where someone has been arrested. It could be so minor, but it's like, that's a crisis. But there's nothing worse than when you have someone has lost their life, if it's a coach or if it's a student athlete. So not to bring us down here, but that's just, to me, that's the thing where we have to make sure we're dealing with everyone, you know, and respectfully and making sure that we're not rushing the news. I mean, we want to make sure that family is ready for when we say anything at all.
Do you remember your first crisis?
Wow. I'm drawing a blank.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't. I mean,
because that's the type of thing I would think there's not a manual that tells you to walk through it. Like, that's something you have to experience right. As a human.
And I think it might have been. I think it was at St. Joe's, and I think it was the death of a student athlete. So I don't want to go into particulars on it. But I think I was talking to who was at St. Joe's too, Joe Lenardi, and he was handling university communications, and Joe is Mr. Bracketology. But just to go through how he would handle this and how the university would want to handle it, because he was doing it from the university side. But yeah, I haven't had many, Matt, which is good.
We mentioned Fran Dunphy, who is one of those guys. He's everywhere.
Sure.
It is amazing. And when I say everywhere, I mean showing up when somebody passes, showing up when somebody maybe coaches a first game. What was it like being with him?
Well, he was, like, I knew him before he came to Temple. He was such a caring person. He knew my father well. So to me, that was something that having that relationship was special. Just an amazing man who just happens to be a tremendous basketball coach. And I'm happy to call him a friend.
Favorite part of what you do?
I get the biggest joy out of sharing a story that's going to inspire others. When you see a student athlete doing something and getting that publicity and then knowing that that's touching lives. To me, that's the biggest thing that we can do here is everyone wins and loses games. But when you can share something that's going to touch someone's life, that's the most important thing we do.
We talked about the difference in the landscapes from when you started to now. If you knew what you knew now, would you get into this business starting today?
I still would, yeah. I mean, I love what I do. I love promoting others and promoting what's good in athletics. So I really do. I mean, I'd like to be a millionaire too, but I mean, if I don't get that, I'm happy promoting others. So I would get back into this business, and I love selling this business to students to say you want to do something. You're not going to be a professional athlete or an athlete, but you love sports. This is a good way to be involved in sports.
What is the biggest thing you tell young aspiring people getting into the PR SID business?
Well, you don't have a life. I mean, there's a lot of hours. This isn't a 9-to-5 job. But the one thing is, you're going to be around something that you're a part of, and you're part of a team. To me, that's special. So if you like athletics, this is a great way to be a part of a team, and you're promoting, you know, all the positives of sport.
Larry Dougherty, this was so much fun. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks, Matt. You got it.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank Larry Dougherty, Senior Associate Athletic Director for Strategic Communications at Temple University, for being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, want to help us out, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @1onepod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at @MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening. And be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You walk in tired and hungry. One bad dinner away from losing it. You don't like to cook. You don't want more takeout. You just want something good. That's why there's Dish by Blue Apron. Pre-made meals with at least 20 grams of protein and no artificial flavors or colors. From fridge to fork in 5 minutes or less. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.